Hello, cinephiles, and welcome to Indie Outlook, the show that sheds light on must-see cinema from the Windy City and around the globe. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm of HollywoodChicago.com. Today I'm joined by Pat McDonald, my colleague at HollywoodChicago.com. Thank you, Pat, for being back on the show.
Matt, it's always a pleasure.
We just can't get enough of you. You just have to keep coming back. That's just how this whole thing works. We have to keep reviving our demented father-son chemistry.
Or like the mafia, whenever I keep pulled away, they keep bringing me back. Bring me back
exactly.
In.
Exactly, that's right.
Godfather 3.
And that's right, for anyone who didn't know. But today, I kind of want to just look at an actor's career.
An actor
who I think is so, he's just so above like the vast majority of other actors I can think of, really, like currently in the game. And someone who really hasn't gotten like the ridiculous Oscar love that really doesn't really amount to anything. He's only had one Oscar nomination, no wins. He's gotten a ton of
Sideways?
Golden Globes. No, it wasn't even for Sideways.
What was it for?
It was for Cinderella Man. Yes, people were talking about Paul Giamatti.
Yeah,
Paul Giamatti. We're talking about this actor who seems to bring his A game to every single picture I see him in.
Yes.
Regardless of what it's about, regardless if it's even deserving of that, I think he's just one of the hardest working actors in the game today.
Well, I think he certainly has built himself up again from a point of being the working actor to the point where he's getting supporting roles or walk-on roles to a supporting, to a lead.
Yes.
So we see his progression from 1990 to the present time in almost a revelatory sense, you know. We see the actor develop. And as you were saying, you want to talk about what films he's done where he's, you know, even in bad films, he kind of makes an impact. And do you have something as an
example? Well, that's what I want to talk about. Yeah, because I think,
we want to
hit, like, his best films. And
right.
I think you prepared a top five for us. I'm looking forward to hearing about. But I have just a whole just smorgasbord of roles of films that he really, I mean, even if the film doesn't work, it's still worth seeing because he's in it, because of what he does in
it. That's interesting.
Here's one example. Probably,
right,
we'll start with
good.
The very worst example.
All right.
Is M. Night Shyamalan's Lady in the Water, a film that was really, for anyone who wasn't sure if M. Night Shyamalan had finally gone off the deep end, it was a foregone conclusion
and it
had
a pool in it, yeah.
Because this was the film where it was after The Village got savaged by critics. Shyamalan got very bitter, so he decided to make a movie about how M. Night Shyamalan is a genius that no one understands, and film critics should be eaten by wolves.
I have a very hard time getting through that film. I've watched it several times without being able to get through it. I have to say, I don't think I've seen the entire movie.
I've seen it. I've seen the entire thing because it's one of those things, the morbid fascination of its awfulness just keeps you to it. But it's that coupled with Paul Giamatti's lead performance as this neurotic, stuttering, you know, Nebbish who finds this like nymph in a pool.
Right.
I mean, it's Splash. Come on, people. But, you know, but he does such
I
a
just saw
real,
Splash the
it,
other day.
It just Splash. Exactly. He does a brilliant job with that character. He delivers a monologue to this, you know, lady in the water, or whatever, like towards the end of the film. That's just has such devastating, like just like psychological impact. You see how this man is clinging to like the one thing in his life that, you know, makes sense. And it's a phenomenal Oscar caliber monologue. It's the kind of monologue that you see in like Oscar reels. It's like, this is like some of our best acting. And it's the middle of just the most laughable turkey. It's really a stunning thing to watch. It's a great performance and just a sheer disaster.
I'm trying to think of, that's a very interesting category of films where you have something that happens that's stunning in a very bad movie. That's
yes. I mean, you can tell he even like researched like in a method way, like mm-hmm. how to stutter, like make it, you know, not just some kind of tick, but make it feel real. And
well,
he outstutters Colin Firth, frankly. So.
Well, I'd like to go back to a very small role he did early in his career. It was in the Howard Stern movie Private Parts.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yes, yes.
And if you read the biography of Stern, he was playing his arch nemesis. He had a nickname for him that had pig in it. I can't remember
okay.
it. But anyway, it's just the way the Giamatti takes that role. It's not that he makes it sympathetic. And this is, again, I think this is retroactive. When you go back and watch a movie, you go, oh, my God, it's Giamatti playing a pig lard or pig bottom or whatever, you know, and you're just like, and then you watch it again and you're just like, wow, he put something in that nobody else could do.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean, seeing him through the years is walk on to supporting to lead.
Definitely.
You know? So I actually have a film like that on my list.
Okay, number five for you.
Man in the Moon. Man in the Moon.
Oh, this is number five. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Where he plays Bob Zemuda to Jim Carrey's Andy Kaufman.
And I was going to bring that up too, because I think that is a brilliant performance that's completely unacknowledged. All the focus was on Carrey in that
right.
film, and yes, he deserved it.
Yes.
It was probably his best performance.
Absolutely.
But Giamatti has to match him at his game. And there's an amazing moment like late in the film where you're not sure if you're looking at Carrey or Giamatti, which is a crazy thing to say, but they're heavily made up as this character.
Right.
And he
Tony
channels...
Clifton.
Tony Clifton, he channels Carrey playing Kaufman.
it's
brilliant. Like,
it's
how did
quite
he
remarkable.
Do that? Yeah.
And they do have the pan over at the end to him sitting in the back of the crowd to
That's right.
give you a mystery
whether
to
who
the
you're
Tony
watching.
Clifton character.
Yeah.
But I truly enjoyed his performance in that one. And
yeah, well, it's very immersive. And here's another bit role I'll throw at you, The Truman Show. He's one of the guys that
right.
Harris as Christoph has at the board manipulating every figment of Jim Carrey's life. Yeah, that's
right.
another Carrey film.
Carrey.
And I think Giamatti is the guy who hesitates in pushing it a step too far, where Christoph basically decides, I'm going to kill off my star. And Giamatti's the guy at the controls who just can't push that button. And it's a key moment. But it's a very human moment, and it makes that thing all the more tense.
And in lesser hands, it would have been a throwaway.
It would have been a complete throwaway,
yeah.
Exactly.
An interesting point about Man the Moon, I was interviewing the woman who played Elaine on Taxi.
Oh, yes. Mary Lou Henner?
Mary Lou Henner. And she told me that she felt that Man the Moon did not capture Andy Kaufman. It only captured the wacky side of him, the extreme side.
Yes.
She said he was a very human individual that had small moments as well as his large moments.
Sure.
And when she said that, I kind of looked at the film again in my mind, and I thought there were moments in that film where they were capturing small things of Andy Kaufman.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Things where he wasn't on. Although it always
right.
seemed like the argument of that film is that he was always giving a performance.
Right.
You never knew quite when he wasn't playing. So it's really kind of the best thing in the film is the pre-title sequence where they literally play a big Andy Kaufman joke on the audience saying, well, this is the end of the movie. Roll credits.
Right.
I mean, and it's kind of, you know, screwing with the audience in that way. But it's in
right.
that way that Kaufman did it, just to see if you were going to follow him where he was going to take you.
Well, it also pointed out the thing when you actually know somebody and you see them in a biography in a film, that has to be a wild thing. And she was playing herself again in the film
mm-hmm.
on the set of Taxi. And I asked her if Milos Forman had told the actors, don't worry about making yourself to look younger. Because Lehrman did his bit in his real age at the
That's
time.
That's right, yeah.
And the whole cast of Taxi were not trying to make themselves
No, because there's no
younger.
Way you could
And
do
I
that.
Thought that was a statement on the surreality of making a movie, and she said, no, we were trying to look younger.
Oh, really?
So back to Giamatti.
You take that anyway, exactly.
Now, did you see Cold Souls?
I did see Cold Souls.
And what did you think of that?
I loved every part of it that had Giamatti in it, and I disliked every part that he wasn't in it. I thought there's a whole parallel subplot that feels like it's out of some European... Really, I don't know, just a very just drab sort of movie. I didn't like how they mixed the stories together, but I like all the stuff with Giamatti. They're doing kind of a Charlie Kaufman-esque
yes.
thing where he's playing himself and
right.
going into his head or something
right.
like
he's
that.
He's playing Uncle Vanya on Broadway.
Yeah.
And he's so distressed by the role that he gives up his soul.
That's right. Was that number four on your list?
Yes,
number four. No, it's a fun one for sure. I mean...
Go back to your subjects on smaller movies.
Here's one really quick. The mm-hmm. Todd Solondz film, Storytelling.
Okay, I didn't see that.
Which is an interesting film. It drew the ire of some critics saying, well, this is just Solondz kind of, rubbing our nose in his process, where it's like, and not even necessarily like his process, but like in how people perceive his work, because Solondz it seems to be a very he takes himself seriously. He's doing serious films about these people, and yet people interpret them as comedies. And so he has Paul Giamatti play a Solondz-type filmmaker who's doing a documentary about a family that he really wants to be, you know, a film that's capturing some sort of truth about their lives. When he shows it in front of an audience, that's just a free for all. They're laughing at these people, and it's sort of like Giamatti plays the salon's sort of stand-in at this point.
It's
a very interesting comment on his own process. And if it had been played by a different actor, maybe it would have felt too self-reflexive. It would have felt too obvious what he's dealing with there. But you really feel bad for Giamatti's character. You can feel like, but he sort of treads that line. He wants to connect with people, and yet he has his own motivation. So it's a really interesting way at like how much can you earn the trust of your subject and then compromise it at the same time.
Sounds like Todd and M. Night should get together.
I know. There you go. Exactly. So.
Well, I also have on my list Sideways, of course. Now, I'm not a huge fan of this film.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there was a lot of obvious stuff in it, and it really never reaches the potential it can. But Giamatti's performance is unbelievable.
Yeah, it was really him and Virginia Madsen.
Right.
The key scene where Madsen opens up to him, or there's a beautiful moment of near connection between them. That I thought was the most impressive thing. It is funny how this film sort of gets brought up as like the movie that shows that like critics just vote for movies that show some kind of reflection of their life. I think A.O. Scott did something where it's like, well, of course the critics like Sideways. It's about a bunch of these struggling writers or middle aged. They don't look particularly attractive, and they're just figuring out what the meaning of life. And so I think that's funny. I mean, there's always an element of truth and autobiography in one's own reviews. I just thought that was, I like how that film has kind of gained a notoriety. Is that, but as a film itself, I don't even think it's Alexander Payne's best film, but it is a very strong work from him. And also the film that Giamatti was just robbed at the Oscars. He should have gotten the Best Actor
absolutely.
Nomination.
And, you know, actually we you saw this movie very recently, Mike Birbiglia.
Oh, Mike Birbiglia, yes.
Birbiglia,
yes,
thank you.
There
Birbiglia's,
you go, no problem.
Sleepwalk with me.
Yes.
Him and his DP watched Sideways because they felt that that was the film that had a smaller budget but was able to create vistas of reality.
Yes, absolutely.
And truth. So.
Even in the split screen.
Yeah,
definitely. The whole atmosphere of the winery and everything. or the wine tasting. What was that? Yeah, it was
right.
Merlot. I won't drink any Merlot.
And also, you know, when you go to the wine country, it's just a vast plain, you know.
Yeah,
it's just,
yeah.
And it was interesting that he had said that. About framing his picture in the same way.
Yeah, definitely, so. Definitely. Here's one I'll bring up really quick. This was the inspiration for this whole podcast. Really, what kind of like re-exploring Giamatti was.
Right, we were talking about
David Cronenberg's Cosmopolis, which my biggest gripe with that film you didn't see it.
I did not.
Well, I mean, the book is a wonderfully troubling look at our times and economic desperation and divide. I mean, there's huge, heady subjects this film is tackling.
Interesting.
But Cronenberg took the novel that he loved so much, and instead of adapting it, he just transcribed it. He just took the exact dialogue out of the book. He says this in the Blu-ray audio commentary, put it on his, page on his computer, and just wrote in like little like scene descriptions, and that's how he adapted the book. Because he had such reverence for the text. I think that was the wrong way to do it.
Wow.
I think this dialogue works probably wonderfully on the page. Even if it's like if I just want to read the script, that works. It's too difficult to grasp when it's just a constant stream of dialogue being shoved in your face. There was not enough attempt to visualize.
Right. Film is a visual
text.
Medium.
It was just too much, fudge of people sitting in a limo talking to one another.
Are dialogue and description. Film is visual.
Yeah,
if
and I thought especially, and Cronenberg's a wonderfully visual filmmaker.
Yes.
That was a real disappointment to me that he didn't try harder to visualize that text.
And what was Giamatti's part of it?
Giamatti, oh my goodness, because this is Robert Pattinson, and definitely his best screen performance easily.
Oh, interesting.
Playing the main character of this like a Wall Street guy who has all these people coming in and out of his limo, even his wife of 22 days, all these people. He doesn't really have a very intimate connection with any of these people. They're all kind of androids talking to one another. The one person he ends up sharing a deep connection with is this stranger he's never met, who ends up being the guy who's trying to assassinate him this whole time. this is a mild spoiler alert, but it's pretty obvious from the get-go what's going on. And Paul Giamatti plays this assassin. And for the last half hour of the film, it's just Giamatti and Pattinson in a room talking, and Giamatti's character is the one person who finally just like brings Pattinson to life, you know, at the end, where it's like all of a sudden you see that iciness fall away and you start to see these two people connecting on this weird, bizarre level, because it's like Pattinson is drawn to this guy thinking, well, maybe this is my fate and I'm just ending up in this room and this is a higher power taking over, and then he realizes that Giamatti is just a screwed up guy like he is.
It's an
astounding performance from Giamatti in that.
Awesome. Now, do you feel like that Pattinson has finally crossed that barrier from teen idol to somebody who could be a player in his later career?
I think Pattinson was not happy that Twilight became what it was as far as a franchise. I feel like he is a serious actor, and I feel like if there's anyone who's the most happy with that franchise ending, it's Pattinson.
Well, and I'll also recommend Kristen Bell in On the Road.
Oh, you mean Kristen Stewart in
Stewart,
On the Road.
Right.
Oh, that's all right. Or Kristen Bell.
They're all the same.
That's right. I think she has a Sundance movie this year.
Kristen Stewart in On the
Kristen
Road.
Yeah, Kristen Stewart, sure.
Does a terrific job with a very complex character and a very throwaway character. So
definitely. No, I'll definitely.
So I'm going to bring up American Splendor because I will say what was interesting about Splendor, of course, is we saw the real Harvey in the film.
Yes, and then Harvey Picar.
Picar, yes. And thank you for filling me in with my specious memory. And when you whenever you see the real one, you desperately want Paul Giamatti to come back.
It's true. because he's almost too real.
He outdoes Picar as Picar. Yeah. It's an amazing conundrum.
Well, that was really, I mean, I
think that was part of the film.
Yes. I mean, I say he was robbed with Sideways, but he was really robbed with American Splendor. That is truly one of the most extraordinary performances of that decade.
Movie.
I mean,
it's a
truly
great movie.
Truly, and what a wonderful film about, you know, creating an autobiographical work of art and having this caricature that kind of follows you around and what's real and what's not. And
the notion of American Splendor, how is a believing base in this country, you can do whatever you want to do as long as your passion is going to keep you going through it. Mm-hmm. And that's really what the message of the film was.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, no, that's beautifully put.
Captured.
No, that's an amazing performance. Here's one more I'll throw out really quick. This was kind of looked at as kind of like Oscar bait. Oh, I think you've seen it. It's The Ides of March, the George Clooney film that I thought was
a great point to bring up. Wow.
Yes, I thought that his performance was my favorite performance in Ides of March.
I totally agree with you.
A total slime ball, you know, type character that really kind of embodies the corruption of our, you know, political system, you know, in so many different ways, and such a vivid characterization with the small amount of screen time that he had.
Right.
Out of all the, and that was an incredible cast that Clooney assembled. The movie was good, not great. Giamatti's performance was the best part of that.
Well, I think, you know, and we always talk about this in our various discussions about film, but the truth was there. The truth was in Giamatti's performance. The rest of the cast seemed to go for the easier stereotypes.
Sure, yeah.
Especially Clooney.
Yeah.
And I'm not.
Yeah, Clooney, that was the least interesting performance in his own film.
He seemed to be distracted by something else while making that film.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
He was distracted by his eyeliner, if the framing was right or something like that.
Or maybe his production of Argo. I don't know.
Sure. I know. Yeah, that's. Okay, now you haven't said your number one yet, though.
My number one.
What is that?
A terrific, over-the-top, beautiful, brilliant performance, Barney's Version.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yes.
And that was also a Golden Globe winner for Best Actor.
Yes.
Nothing at the Oscars.
Yes, again, he was ignored. But Mordecai Richter's amazing novel, by the way. You talk about book to film. They did a really good job of capturing the zeitgeist of the book in the film, although the book is far superior.
Mm.
You get more of a sense of Barney in the book. But regardless, Giamatti takes that character to a new realm. And in fact, I read the book afterward, and all I could picture was Paul Giamatti reading the character of Barney.
Yes.
It was beautifully done.
Because he's not the most sympathetic of characters in this. He's actually, I saw a interview online where he said, well, he's basically just kind of like a bastard sort of character in this who kind of gets left off, you know, he kind of gets let off the hook in a karmic way towards the end of his life.
Yes.
I won't give away too much.
No, you can't, but yes,
but he does. But he's still one of those actors, kind of like, I'll even throw in I won't say Richard Gere is on the same level, but his performance in Arbitrage, it makes you still not necessarily root, but feel deeply for someone who is essentially an amoral sort of character.
Well, we go back to Private Parts with his pig blossom, pig turd, pig.
No,
pig.
Sure. We'll see. We'll look this up later. Oh, boy.
But making sympathetic characters, people you necessarily would not want to meet.
Yes.
Which is a very interesting dynamic for an actor. So
definitely.
This
is the last thing I'll say. Because if I had to pick my number one Paul Giamatti performance, and I'm wondering if you've seen it. I'm okay. Not sure if you've seen it. It is the HBO miniseries John Adams.
Yes, I have seen it.
Okay. I think that performance is so towering because you're following this one character, you know, John Adams, through this entire arc of his political career and all the different sides of who he is and how you're rooting for him sometimes and wincing at him at other times. it is really just one of the great films about a life in politics that I've ever seen. And just the grandest arc, him and Laura Linney in that film. That was by Tom Hooper, who did Les Miserables and The King's Speech. This is head and shoulders above anything Hooper's done for the theaters, for sure. You got to see it.
I did enjoy, particularly in John Adams, my mother and I actually talked about this. It was like Mad Magazine at some point because they had all the founding fathers together.
Yes.
I expected a road show of 1776.
He wanted them to break in a song, which then would have been just like Les Miserables.
I'd love to see Paul Giamatti do 1776. I
think it'd be good for sure.
A remake.
So
Rob Marshall.
That was exactly.
I'm begging you, Bob, do 1776.
Oh, please, just for Pat. You can go down to Pat's basement and stage it right there, and that'll be the whole audience for that, for sure.
On that note.
On that note, me and Pat have given you plenty of things to Netflix, and just seriously, Paul Giamatti, one of the best there is. I think his performance in Cosmopolis is the equal to all of the best supporting actor performances
this
year.
Cosmopolis and Barney's version of Double Feature, great movie night.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Pat, for being here.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it.
And for all of our recent reviews and interviews, you can check out HollywoodChicago.com, and for my independent film blog and podcast, Indie-Outlook.com.
Do it.
That concludes today's episode of Indie Outlook. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm, and I invite you to tune in next time for more coverage of the latest and greatest in modern independent cinema. Till then, I'll be on the lookout.